One night, my awakening when I was 21, I came off medication for Tourette's, and what some would call, I went through a psychosis. I call it just being awakened, and I started to write on my walls around the house, right?
Yeah, that's really cool. How long were you on the medication? When did they put you on that?
9 years, and it was basically to slow my brain down so the twitching stopped, but obviously the twitching was about thoughts that I haven't worked out yet. So when you give me the medication, you just slow my brain down and I don't work out what I'm trying to work out.
I'm not a big fan of medication. I know that sometimes we need it, but I think it holds us back from what we need to learn from the illness, issue, challenge. I call it a challenge because it's what makes you unique, the way you think. There's a wonderful gift in that. So I like to teach people that how we are, instead of rejecting it or pushing it aside with medication, to embrace who you are. I want to go back to something you said, though, that I really, as an artist, I find attractive. You said that you were writing on everything.
Art is how the person perceives that image as much as it is that person being creative, painting their piece. And everything is art at the end of the day. It's just expressing what's in your mind.
Right. And you know what, when I say spiritual artist, I'm getting a better picture of what I'm trying to teach people to do. So when I say a spiritual artist, I say work on the non-physical part of you that is causing that physical condition.
Right. Tell me who you are, what you do, and why you do it.
Good morning. I love these questions. I've watched some of your podcasts, so it made me do some pondering before we logged in today. So I am a spiritual artist, educator, podcaster, and writer. And so what I do is I combine art, spirituality, and personal growth together to help people use those aspects together through creativity. I believe that art can be a powerful vehicle for healing, understanding, and connecting more deeply with ourselves and the world around us. And I do this through workshops and retreats, and I speak at art groups locally, and I wrote a book. And why do I do it? Oliver, I do it because I want people to be more self-aware. And I think in today's world, more than anything, everybody needs to be a little more self-aware who they are and how they operate and also how they're connected to each other.
Yeah, so when I had my awakening when I was 21, I came off medication for Tourette's, and what some would call, I went through a psychosis. I call it just being awakened, and I started to write on my walls around the house, right?
Right.
Loads of stuff that came out. Pi came out, 3169, all these numbers like 7, 14, 21, 28. And I was linking all these things that I'd heard in my childhood. For example, my father always said, just check. Meaning just check, you know, make sure you know exactly what you're doing. Make sure it's right. Just check. And I wanted to be a millionaire my whole life. And that was to me about having control over myself. So I don't rely on anybody because I heavily relied on my parents. Still kind of do. So for me, when I was writing on the wall, just check, it came out as J-U-S and then C-H-E-K-E. Now, obviously, that's not how you spell check or just, but that's what came out. And I was writing down on the walls, just check, because I'd heard that my whole life from my dad. And it was like stored in my subconscious brain that everything had to be just checked, or I need to get approval from somebody, like a teacher, for example. And all this patterns and diagrams and symbols came out. And I didn't know what it meant. I was just following what they meant. And every time I heard somebody, I would write it down. And then another thing would link to it. And then another thing would link to it. And it would all keep linking. And I remember just going out for a walk and seeing something on a sign. And then I'd see something else down the line that linked to that sign. Then I'd see a number plate drive past. And it was all about linking stuff. And I'd see feathers on the floor. And I'd look at the clock and it would be a certain number. And certain numbers would come up. And I realize now that for the first time I'd become aware, because my whole life I'd been in my head thinking my whole life. And that's what the Tourette's was. It was me stuck in my head trying to think about everything rather than just being everything. And so when I came off medication, it allowed me to process all my thoughts I had in my head growing up to the point where there was nothing to think about. And as there's nothing to think about, I'm no longer in my subconscious mind. I'm now out my mind and I'm aware of everything. And things that are obvious to most people were not obvious to me because I'd lived in my head. Everyone else is living out their head and communicating to people. So I suddenly became aware of what's bloody obvious. But to me, it wasn't obvious. I didn't know how to interact with people at a party, or you must bring a gift to someone's house when you meet them, or, you know, say sorry even if it's not your fault, for example, because I spent my whole life in my head thinking about what is life rather than just living life. And it wasn't psychosis. It was me becoming aware for the first time in my life at 21 and suddenly seeing everything made sense. Oh my God, I can see an ant eating a fly. I didn't know they did that. What do you mean you don't know they did that? Because I've never seen it because I was in my head. And like hypnosis, if you're being hypnotized, you're not following what's outside, and you could be driving in your car and thinking about something and then suddenly wake up and think, God, I've just driven 15 minutes and I don't even remember. And so, yeah, that is the self-awareness that I suddenly became aware of.
Yeah, that's really cool. How long were you on the medication? When did they put you on that?
9 years. It was risperidone, very powerful psychotic drug, which is used for schizophrenic people. And it was basically to slow my brain down so the twitching stopped. But obviously the twitching was about thoughts that I haven't worked out yet. So when you give me the medication, you just slow my brain down and I don't work out what I'm trying to work out. So the next day I wake up, attempt to think about it again, take the meds, never work it out. And then 10 years later, I've got 10 years worth of unanswered questions in my brain.
Right. I mean, I'm not a big fan of medication. I know that sometimes we need it, but I think it holds us back from what we need to learn from the illness, issue, challenge. I call it a challenge, you know, because it's what makes you unique. Right. And there's a gift in that for you, the way you think. There's a wonderful gift in that. So I like to teach people that how we are, instead of rejecting it or pushing it aside with medication, to embrace who you are and say, hey, well, how does this make me special and unique, a unique creator, you know? And you are, you're connecting things together, ideas together that a lot of people don't connect. But that's where creativity comes from, right? When you take something from over here and you put them together, you know?
Yeah, Elon Musk said, the reason why Elon Musk's businesses are so closely related is because what he does is he has one business and then he creates another business based on how that is created. So he's not just creating like a gardening company and then creating a computer business. He's creating like SpaceX, whatever he did first, and using the principles of SpaceX to create an electric car. So his brain has already created like this neural network for this topic, and all he's got to do is expand over there. So he's already done the hard work for you. Yeah, that's what I have to say for that bit.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's true. I'm ADHD. I've always been very hyper. My mind's going a mile a minute. But what happens is I ran an ad agency for 25 years and do the same thing. I would learn something over in this business and take this concept over into a totally different business world. Because what happens is most people follow the same pattern of the world that they're in, you know, like accounting system. We always did it this way. You know, you're like, well, you don't have to do it that way. You can think outside of the box. You can be creative. I want to go back to something you said, though, that I really, as an artist, I find attractive. You said that you were writing on everything.
Yeah.
Now, do you make art? Do you create art? Have you ever painted?
No. I just mean a black marker pen writing on my bedroom wall.
Well, you
everything
know,
that was... Everything that was in my head was just coming out. And it was like all these patterns that to me made absolute sense. But to someone else looking, they're seeing like Jesus and 3.169 and fucking like pictures of like the Horus eye and stuff like that. To me, it was just obvious. But to someone looking at it, it's like, wow. And I remember the crisis team came around, actually came upstairs and looked at my bedroom. Probably think that's why we're here. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. You're here because I've allowed you in the house because I know the system needs to get me at the system. And you can only do that by going through the system, right? But it's when you said about art and how art is just simply someone's imagination. And even if it's like a banana just stuck to a wall, like this museum at the moment, I don't know where it is, but there's basically a banana stuck to a wall.
Right.
If someone sees that as art, then that is why they've come. If they want to come and pay to see a banana stuck to a wall, to them, that's art. Art is how the person perceives that image as much as it is that person being creative, painting their piece. And everything is art at the end of the day. It's just expressing what's in your mind.
Right. I agree that everything is art. And I would love to see you take that that technique. So I have a video on my YouTube channel that was really popular. It's called Acemic Writing. And it's where you just sit and you don't have to, it's not words. Like you just said, it's, you know, it's even less, more fragmented than how you described. And you just scribble and scribble and scribble and let this come out of you on an intuitive level. If you think about Basquiat, the artist, and how he designed his murals, that's exactly what it was, right? It's like all these, a horse and a lock and a rainbow and the word shit, you know, it's all combined for artistic expression. I would think you'd be, that'd be so cool if you got yourself a big piece of canvas and just, even with a black marker, just go with it, right? Start scribbling on it.
So I did actually do that. There's someone called Darren Brown in the UK. He's like a very famous hypnotist, magician, performer. And what he does is he takes people on stage and he hypnotizes them and he gets them just to write whatever. And their hand is just, they're not in control of their hand. It's just creating whatever. Okay. And then he puts it in a box somewhere. And then he does like a show and makes them think of a word or an image. And then he goes back to that piece of paper. And it looks like a scribble if you don't know what it is. But actually, if you look at it, it clearly says the word, or it actually has meaning. There is something to it. It's not just a scribble. There is something to it. Like he got like 50 people to predict the weight of a cow using conscious collective energy. Like, can you predict the lottery? Can you all work out the weight of a cow? And no one knows the weight of a cow. It's just, can you all sit in a room, tune into energy, and write the weight of a cow? And the whole point of them kind of surrendering and closing their eyes and just letting it flow is because they're tuning into energy rather than writing what they think the cow weighs. And then when they put all those pieces together, the writing symbolized more so than others, say 400 kilograms. And then they find out the weight of the cow and it's 400 kilograms. So I did that on a small scale. I used to get post-it notes and I would just write stuff and I'd come back in a few days time and see if it meant anything. So if I went out to the casino or I met somebody called Sharon, I'd look back at the piece of paper and it might say Sharon or £230, which I left the casino on. So I use it as a way to predict my future by writing my future and then moving into it. So I'd leave the casino unconsciously at 222 as opposed to 300 because I'd already put on that piece of paper subconsciously, I want to leave with 222. So I did all this. It was very interesting.
That is cool. You know, I think that you're pulling out, you talk about pulling from the universal mind, right? The universal consciousness.
Yes.
And that, so what I think, I have a different level to that. I do think we're always pulling from the universal consciousness, but I think we're interpreting through who we are. The unique person that Oliver is, that information is coming through you and interpreting through you. So I teach artists to let it happen, to let it have that uniqueness that is them and how they think. So it's not just, because I don't think information is just information, right? It's just, it's universal consciousness. There's tons of information out there, but you want to pull the information in that relates to you, that symbolizes something to you, and that also is affected by how you interpret it, how you, the simple way that you write it on the canvas is coming through your arm and the strength and the muscle of your arm and the thoughts that you're thinking or not thinking, you know, in this case. But it's all, that's what's make, you know, you think of Jackson Pollock, that's what was so unique about what he did. He was spraying paint, but it wasn't just like how, if you were to do the same thing, it would look different because you have a different arm strength. You have a different sense of pace. You have a different rhythm in your body. The way you think, your choice of color, the canvas size, it's going to feel, even most people say, well, that's just a spatter, right? And it's like, no, it's not. It's actually the uniqueness of Pollock on that canvas. And so what you draw with a marker is going to have the uniqueness of you on that canvas, you know?
Yeah. And what paint you go to next out of all the hundred of paints creates a different color. Like purple mixed with green might become blue, whereas if I chose orange, it might become red. And right, the whole thing's completely different. Now it goes from looking like a field to looking like, I don't know, flame or something. And now anyone looking at it will see everything differently. And what I've realized is that we're taught like colors, blue, pink, orange, you know, whatever. But there was a thing called the gold and the blue dress. And they asked basically loads of people around the world, what color is this? Half said gold, half said blue. How the fuck is that possible? Which basically means that half the world sees everything differently. So right. We're taught that this shade is blue, but to them, that shade is actually representing what we would see as red. So someone may be looking at that canvas completely differently in color form than somebody else, even though we think that's blue because we're taught that's blue. But to them, that shade of blue is actually, to us, red. So the whole thing's completely different.
Right. You know what I think? I think what we see is based on our subconscious and who we are. I do an activity. I just had a class last week with a bunch of artists, and I had them draw a simple butterfly, the shape of a butterfly. But they could choose. I gave them a box, you know, the old-fashioned box of crayons with like 150 colors. Well, just the color that they pick. The color crayon that they pick is a reflection of them, and then how they drew it, whether they drew it very simplistic, whether they do it realistic from an angle, whether they position it in the upper left corner or the bottom right, all those things is how they see the world. And that's kind of the challenge we're dealing with on the planet right now, right? Everybody seeing the world so differently, you know, and that's a joyous thing that we see the world differently, but we have to also be open to how, oh, well, some people see a blue dress, and, you know, that's okay. And even though I see gold, it's okay that they see blue, right? You know, so it's that getting to accept that we all think differently and appreciate it, you know?
What's your book about?
So my book is, so when I used to go to Santa Fe once a year for a week-long retreat, and have you heard of Morning Pages? It's like journaling. The Artist's Way. Have you ever read The Artist's Way? Is a book that was very popular in the 80s. Taught people to journal their thoughts, just free thought. Write it. Well, I did that for like 8 years when I would go paint. And during COVID, I sat down and reread all my notes. And so I'll share this with your listeners. What's really neat about journaling is you start seeing that there are repetitive patterns in the way you think. I'm like, you know, on Tuesday, I don't have enough money. You know, the next Friday, I wish I had more money. 2 weeks later, why don't I have any money? And you see that repetitive pattern coming up in your personality. And then you have the choice to say, well, maybe I don't want to be fear-based anymore. Maybe I don't want to worry about money anymore. Or maybe I need to address this. This is an issue. But it's like stepping back. You know how you said you can step back and watch your thinking? That's where the joy is. So long story short, I wrote the book on all these notes about when I paint. So Oliver, when I paint, I get in this place of no mind, like you were just talking. There's no mind there. I'm just reacting. And so it's to me, that feels like I'm connected to a greater power. Now, if you want to call it God, Jesus Christ, Muhammad, Buddha, I feel like it's just a power source of spirit. And so when I paint, I'm in that power. So I wrote the book on all the different ways to get into that vibration. I think you talk about vibration in your notes. You know, like you're on a scale. How do you get to that place where you're receiving ideas, free flow? Well, I have to resist judgment. If I'm critical of myself and others, I won't get there. If I'm angry, I have trouble getting there. If I'm in a place of pure love and acceptance, that's what I like about listening to your podcast. I really can tell that you don't judge people. You're just like, hey, this is interesting. I'm going to talk to this guy, right? I'm going to talk. This guy's talking about sex. Let's talk about it. Oh, this woman's talking about this. Let's talk about it. So you're in the place, right? You're in the zone. And so the book is about, how do you get into the zone? How do I get into the zone over and over again? Every time I walk into the art studio and paint something, every time I speak to a group of people, every time I do a podcast, how do I make sure that I'm in that place? And I have to be non-judgmental. I have to be in a space of love. I have to be accepting of who I am. And I have to listen. That's a big one. Listen to what's going on, you know?
Yeah. Somebody said recently that they can feel I don't judge them.
Right.
When they're with me, they can see that I'm just accepting them as a human being, and I'm not judging. And I am not judging anybody. I am truly present with anyone at any time, and I don't judge. Part of that is probably because I've done so much work on myself from being judged my whole life from people that you just don't do what you wouldn't want being done to yourself. But nevertheless, there is a skill to continuously be around judging people and still have no judgment in you. It's almost like if you hang around enough negative people that piss you off, you might slightly get pissed off and just say something. It takes a lot of skill and wisdom to just become aware and check yourself. Okay, you're in a room full of negative people. You're not always in a room full of negative people, but life is full of negative and positive people. So just embrace this 45 minutes in this place. Then you can get out. Don't leave now because you'll be seen as rude, even though you do what you want. But if you do what you want, then there might be repercussions because they might not want to be with you next time and you've got to see them again. So stay put. And so it's almost like this awareness voice always
right
narrating myself from a third person of what's happening right now, as opposed to reacting off impulse of how I feel emotionally. You react off intelligence. And to that point, I actually, you know, I've never been able to draw. My dad's an artist and he can draw anything, but I've never been able to draw stuff. I can't really hold a pen. I can't write. So, you know, well, holding a paintbrush would be probably aching. But when you talk about like how your paint behind you is just there's nothing to it. It's just whatever comes out.
Right.
I quite like the fact that if I had a drawing, if I had a canvas and I just had paint and I was just given the chance to paint whatever, I know some really good shit will come out. I can't draw people, but it could be anything. It could just be the most nonsense, but there is something to it. And actually, that's put something in my mind of I want to get a canvas at some point when the time is right, when I've got my own place, I've got space. And I'd love to just, rather than just watch Netflix, just draw. Because what do we have in this life apart from to find a purpose right now? You know, right. You can do anything you want. And I've always liked the idea of painting. So, yeah, very interesting. Doesn't have to be a person.
And I would say you're there. You've got the hard part done. Just remember that. When you go and stand before that campus, don't judge. Whatever you put down on it, don't judge it. Just let it happen and be in a place of love. And you know that little voice that you were just talking about that speaks to you? Yes. That's what it's all about, listening to that little voice. That's, I call it the little Chris, right? You know, you were talking about being in a room full of people that are talking and being critical. And I'll be like, little Chris finds these people annoying. So, you know, you talk about third person. I always do that. Little Chris really hates this woman. And then I have to come in from a higher self and say, okay, little Chris is threatened, angry, irritated with this woman, but this woman represents a piece of me. Right. I love this. My yoga instructor told me this. Whenever you have trouble, always say to yourself, when am I like that? So when you're in a room full of critical people, you can say to yourself, when am I critical and judgmental? And it helps you connect to them and say, well, you know, if I'm feeling insecure, I'm really critical. So maybe they're just feeling insecure right now. And so I'm going to be a little more compassionate with them. You know, and so what happens is you shift that energy of you connect. You use that to connect with them, see their shortfalls and say, hey, I see love for them. I see, and I call it seeing spirit in them, seeing the power in them that they are special to, even though right now they're showing some behavior that I'm not thrilled with, you know? So.
Yeah, that's beautiful because, you know, before you start the journey of self-development, we were those person. We were that person. We were those traits. And if we weren't those traits, our parents or their parents were those traits, and it's come down. And even though it's not directly being seen as that trait, it's come down the scale from that trait, and it's just showing like that. So when you see that that person is an old version of me or an old version of my parent or their grandparent, suddenly you have empathy. It's almost like you've got heart disease because great granddad had heart disease. Well, that's not your fault, but it's also not his fault. It's because his great-granddad had heart disease. So it's no one's fault. So when you can't blame anybody, you can only have empathy. You know, if somebody knocks over something, like if your grandchild knocked over a glass of water on your canvas, right? And then you find out that somebody had punched him in the head and he was all dizzy.
Right.
And then he fell on it. All of a sudden, you now have hatred towards the person who punched him. And you don't care about the painting or that your grandson knocked it over because it wasn't his fault. So right. Now you have empathy for somebody who you wouldn't otherwise have empathy for because you've found a way to counteract the emotional, impulsive reaction of, fuck's sake, I don't want to be here. This woman's annoying because of X, Y, and Z. She's got no self-awareness. And then you suddenly think, maybe no one's told her how annoying she is. Maybe she's not around people who have the self-awareness to see that's annoying. That's not her fault. And if she knew, I'm sure she would change. Like if someone smelled a BO and somebody told them, I'm sure they would spray deodorant. They don't know, right. Not their fault. You could blame the other people for not telling them, but then you can't blame men because they might not have been around people who are openly able to tell somebody their negatives because they might be scared of a reaction because their parents might have always been on them as a kid. And so they can't speak up. And so now it's like, okay, well, you're not to blame. The people around you aren't to blame. And those people aren't to blame. So really, who's there to blame? And the answer is no one, because they're all just a version of each other at a different part of our lives.
Right. And you know what, when I say spiritual artist, I'm getting a better picture of what I'm trying to teach people to do. You can't be in blame to solve it, right? But what you do, you were talking about heart disease. What I believe is heart disease is an outpicturing of belief systems, you know, energy, anger. Maybe you never learned how to handle your anger. And the reason it's handed down through generations is because you hand down those same traits. Like, this is how we process anger. We hold it in and we get mad, you know, and so we don't talk about it. We don't share it. And so it's handed down through generations. So when I say a spiritual artist, I say work on the non-physical part of you that is causing that physical condition. So in this case, what is it behind the heart attack? What belief systems, what non-physical things are causing you to have a heart disease problem? And when you do that, when you start going, what is it? Is it my beliefs? Is it how I eat? Is it my habits? And then you can solve it. So I say, go to the spirit level. So when I say go to the spirit level, I know some people say go to a psychic or I don't mean that. I mean, inside of you, go to the process. Everything is cause and effect. Spirit causes effect in manifestation. And so when you go back to the causal level of why this is happening. So for example, I want to go back to something you said earlier. You said that I'm not an artist. Change that and start saying, I haven't focused on that yet, but I am an artist. You know what I mean? I haven't focused on it, but you know what? My dad was an artist, and if he can do it, heck, I can do it, right? And see how that shifts the spiritual level of the whole thing? So
you're right. I've never picked up a brush and drawn.
So but that doesn't mean...
I don't know. I could be fucking brilliant.
You are fucking brilliant. You know, that's the whole point. You are brilliant because you're a unique, individualized creation of spirit, right? There will never be anybody else that views the world that you do like you do. And so take that and embrace it. And the reason you're so compassionate, I think we probably have similar backgrounds, is the more you suffer when you're young. You know, I say to people, I was born gay, I'm gay. And so I dealt with all kinds of teasing and harassment, but it made me more compassionate. And so the reason you're more compassionate, the reason you can sit in a room and not have judgment is because of what was considered a challenge when you were younger. You know, it's a gift. There's a gift in everything, you know?
Yeah. Somebody once said that I lack compassion and empathy. And I would argue at that point when they said that is you want me to experience the pain that you've had when I've had the opposite. So I've always had a father who's been there, give me everything. I do not know what it's like to have an absent father. Someone might have had an absent father and they want me to have empathy and compassion with something in their life that is a direct result of them not having a dad. So rather than me having compassion and empathy, I would just sort of, okay, move on. And that's because I don't know any different. So I do believe that even though you can hold space for somebody and listen to them and try and empathize, you're not going to be able to empathize truly unless you've experienced some pain similar to that. So, you know, with the bullying or stuff growing up for us, we know what it's like to be picked on. So you either hold that anger forever and then give it back out to people, or you flip and do the opposite and you think, you know what? I know what it's like to be picked on. I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to take care of people who are being picked on. It can go both ways. But the point is that can you really be empathetic without really feeling that trait? Can you really feel what it's like unless you're there? We see all like the Ukraine and Palestinian stuff and they're losing family and friends. Can we really empathize what it's like to see a building blow up right there. Like, you can imagine it, but can you really, really feel that pain? And I don't think you can unless somebody's done the same to you in your part of the world. And yeah.
It's hard. And I think you can feel it to a certain extent. At least you can be, I think you can feel it. I don't know if you feel it the same way, but I think you can share the compassion and the understanding. And like, I love what you said earlier. You said you create a space. You know, you create a space for those people. And so, yes, you're right. I can't imagine, right? Can you imagine if suddenly all the roads were breaking down, there was no food transporting, how scary that would be. And so the best thing I can do is, like I told you earlier, is I go and say, when am I sort of like that? When have I felt like that? So I do have a father that was with me all the time, but maybe my mother wasn't with me all the time, you know? And so you can kind of slide that empathy over, right? From a different situation that's similar, you know? Like, I don't know what it's like to have Tourette's. I don't, but I do know what it's like on the spiritual level. Oh gosh, it just came to me. Okay. Go to the spiritual level. You can relate to them on the spiritual level. Because, for example, I know what it's like to not be picked for the basketball team. You know, they sit you against the wall and you're the last picked. And I know what it's like to not be invited to the birthday party where all the kids are going. And so even though my not being invited was from a different cause or from a different effect, being gay, I can relate to you on a spiritual level. And I can say, wow, you know, Oliver, I can only imagine. You know, people being so cruel and so hateful. And so I can relate to you and feel for you. And I feel that, you know, I feel that connection on a spiritual level. Does that make sense?
Well, I was definitely picked last for all the basketball games. And I never got invited to any parties. And I did the one that I invited myself to. I turned up and everyone said, why are you here? Fuck off. No one likes you. And then some other nice person who did have a good parenting threw me a cider and said, here you are, mate, because he empathized with me in that moment. But you're right, you can empathize on the spiritual level when you find a similar situation that, even though it might not be identical, it's very similar. So Tourette's is very simply just sitting in your room thinking for hours and you think, fuck, I haven't done any up drawing, I've just been thinking. The only difference is, the reason why I would twitch is because my brain is going so quick that I call it using other facial muscles to process information. Where someone who hasn't got as much energy as me, when you're thinking, there's no twitching. However, if you look at people, if you study someone in an office, you know when they're thinking because they're blinking their eye a little bit, their nose is twitching a little bit, their jaw's doing a little thing. Now, it might not be massively like you can see them twitching, but when someone's thinking, there's other parts of their muscles twitching and moving, which tells me they're thinking, but just not as intensely. Like, when I used to think, I'm working something out from scratch that I know nothing about. How did Abraham get to the mountain with no boat and there's miles of sea? And I would spend hours trying to find the way. Whereas most people, they're so on a computer, they know kind of what they're trying to do, but they just have to find out what Excel sheet to use, what time computer to go on. So it's not brand new. I was working out brand new shit that no one had worked out before, hence why it was just so intense.
Most people wouldn't take the time with it, right? Most
Nobody
people
would
just
take the time.
No, they move on to something else.
Yeah, whereas I get obsessed and be like, how the fuck did Muhammad get there? I'm gonna find the way.
Well, you know, I know my mind thinks constantly. I mean, I'm thinking when I'm even, and you talk very quickly and I'm following you and I'm still, there's a still thinking on the side, right? I'm like, I'm following Oliver and my mind is still going da 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 da. And that's a challenge, right? I've had to learn how to quiet that mind, that I call it the monkey mind. You've heard the term monkey mind, and how to quiet it. And when I paint and when I create something, that is the most quiet that the mind gets for me. Because I'm putting it in the simple action, the simple action, the simple action. And it doesn't have to be something literal. It doesn't have to be, you know, a little tree with a boat. No, I'm just line work, words. You could do it just with words and formulas in your head. But the passion behind you, I'm hearing this. I'm sorry, but I really do think, I don't think you should wait. I think you should go buy a big piece of poster board, get a marker set. You don't even need paint. And just try it. Just try it for an hour. I could just see you just... I want you to put all that thought process onto the poster board. And you know what? Don't judge it. Do not judge it. Just let it be. And I bet you're going to step back from it and you're going to go, oh my God, that's kind of cool. There's a rhythm to that. There's a rhythm there and it's beautiful. And look at the colors I picked, you know?
Yeah, I'm just getting a flashback of, I actually got an A4 book back in the day and I had a biro and I was just drawing whatever came out. So I did actually do something like this and it was just nonsense, but it, you know, I'm sure it would have made sense if you look into the detail. So yeah, I think I might do that. Just because why not? But yeah, that was me. I'll be listening to you. And then the voice would commentate, okay, he just said this, and this is because he means that. Oh, fuck, what did he just say? And you'd focus again. And you're like, okay, what he meant was this, but actually what you should have said was that. Anyway, relevant. And then that was me. And then and then the narrator would catch me up on what was being said to the point where I'm in a delay of, like a 10-second delay of repeating what you've just said until I catch up. But then you never catch up because that's the problem, is that you're not present. Your brain's always trying to analyze as opposed to be present, and that was a skill I had to master because it was horrendous.
And you know, that's exactly what the book is about, how to be present, right? And stretch that time. And so what I started doing, Oliver, when I painted, instead of evaluating whether the painting would sell or whether it looked good, I evaluated how long I could stay present. How long can I? It's right there, right there, right there, right there. And the longer I could do it, at first, maybe, seriously, when I say this, maybe 5 minutes, right, at max. At first, I could do it, and then my mind started jumping in. So it was about quieting the mind and keeping myself present, 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 and learning to extend it. And so when I stopped painting, when my mind came back in, which it does, right, I just thought, wow, look at that. I did that for 5 minutes. For 5 minutes, my mind shut the hell up. And I painted, but then it's gotten now where I can sit down for an hour and a half, 2 hours. And for the most part, just stay in the present, right? Not into the future, not into the past. That's also in my book. Stay right where you are. Stop thinking about where you're going and where you were. Stop thinking about what mom said. I can't be an artist. Mom said you can't make money being an artist. I'm such a loser, blah, blah, blah. Stop. Just be present.
Yeah. Where can people get your book?
Oh, it's on Amazon. It's easily found on Amazon. It's called The Spiritual Artist by Christopher John Miller. And it's been great because I'm getting people reading it, you know, across the world. And they're sending me, a lady sent me a card from Australia saying how much she loved the book. And that means a lot. And so when you ask me what my goal is to have people know who they are, right? To know who they are.
To end, if there was one thing that you could tell the world, if you had one day left to live, what would it be?
Be present. Just take the time to go out into nature if you have to, go riding a bike. You can use your body to be present. You can use painting, creativity to be present, or even doing podcasts. If you learn how to really listen to the other person and not be in your head, that's where you want to be.
Right. Thank you very much for coming on. And we'll end that there.